Don Imus saved Sports Talk Radio. And are the Red Sox ahead of the Yankees? Welcome to a special edition of Sports Media Beat. I am Dan Lovallo. The special edition, December 29th, 2019. Explain in a moment why I am doing this special edition of Sports Media Beat. But let me just say you can visit my website, sportsmediabeat.com, and you can also subscribe to the podcast. We are in the Apple Podcast Directory or wherever your favorite podcast directory is, whether it be Spotify, Stitcher, Google, we are there. Well, the breaking news on December the 28th, early Friday evening, that legendary Don Imus, the outstanding shock jock, as he is being described, passed away at the age of 79 at a hospital in Texas, his illness undisclosed. Imus was last heard on the radio regularly in March of 2018 when he stepped away. Legendary in so many ways, controversial in a lot of ways. It's what got him booted off the radio for a time when he made those ridiculous remarks about the Rutgers women's basketball team. But he was legendary. He's in several halls of fame. And he also saved Sports Talk Radio. Yes, Don Imus saved Sports Talk Radio. How? Well, he had been on WNBC Radio in New York, 660 on the dial, when Imus Communications bought WHN, 1050 on the AM dial in New York, and programmed a 24-hour, 7-day-a-week sports talk radio station and changed the call letters to WFAN. First of its kind in the nation, all sports format. Many people said it wouldn't work. And in fact, the ratings did flounder until the radio landscape changed in the late 1980s. That is when Imus Broadcasting, or Imus Communications, bought from General Electric WNBC and then moved WFAN from 1050 on the dial to 660 on the dial, this powerhouse, this 50,000-watt AM powerhouse station. And they programmed it, all sports except in the morning. Morning Drive was Imus in the morning. Imus hosted the Morning Drive show. And that's the way it was going to be. And Imus at that point was really all talk. He'd play an occasional song, mostly the blues. He had a program based on comedy and interviews, very serious interviews. In fact, Imus was one of the best interviewers out there. And it was a must that politicians, particularly those running for president, got on the Imus in the Morning show. But Imus, cognizant of the fact that he was on an all-sports radio station, also incorporated sports in his show. And in fact, he made Chris Mad Dog Russo, one half of the Mad Dog, Mike and the Mad Dog show on WFAN. He brought Russo in for a time to do sports in the morning. And even though Russo was also filling in as a talk show host on WFAN, it was his exposure on the Imus show and Imus pushing him that helped to unite Mad Dog Russo with Mike Francesa and set up the Mike and the Mad Dog show and really saved all sports talk radio. Because what happened is that program took off and not only became a ratings winner on WFAN, but also a cash cow. They brought in millions of dollars. And in many respects, they have Don Imus to thank for that. Because Imus not only had a highly rated show in the morning on WFAN, but he pushed Chris Russo. That obviously sent ears to the afternoon drive show with Mike and the Mad Dog, and it helped to save WFAN to the point where not only was it bringing in a lot of money, but it led other radio stations in the nation to go to an all-sports format. So Don Imus, very much connected with sports and very much a part of the sports media beat. Mike Francesa sent out a tweet after word came out about the passing of Don Imus. And again, this shocked a lot of people. Imus went into the hospital on Christmas Eve, but Mike Francesa sent out the following tweet: "Shocking news on the passing of my friend Don Imus. He will long be remembered as one of the true giants in the history of radio. My thoughts and prayers to Deirdre and Wyatt. Godspeed." Deirdre, his wife, of, I believe, 25 years. Don Imus, dead at the age of 79, and it's not an exaggeration to say that Don Imus saved sports talk radio, the 24-hour format, in this country. Okay, other news. One of the reasons we're doing this sports media beat on December the 29th, because other stories are breaking. ESPN is heralding the strong Monday night football ratings. ESPN is done for the season as far as Monday night football is concerned, although they will televise an NFL playoff game. Total viewership growth for the second straight year is why ESPN is just doing jumping jacks over this, and who can blame them? They had 16 ratings wins throughout the series this year. As it turns out, Monday Night Football was cable television's most watched series in 2019. In fact, ESPN issued the following statement: ESPN's Monday Night Football scored its most viewed regular season since 2015, finishing the 17-game NFL schedule in 2019 with 12,569,000 viewers, up 8% year over year compared to 2018. Monday Night Football has now posted consecutive seasons with 8% viewership gains and is up an impressive 17% overall compared to 2017. Monday Night Football also ranks as cable's most watched series for the third straight year. The deal that ESPN has with the NFL on Monday Night Football runs through 2021. The network pays the NFL per year $1.9 billion. That's right, $1.9 billion. So ESPN certainly ecstatic over the ratings that Monday Night Football garnered for the network this year. Speaking of ratings, it was wall-to-wall NBA coverage on Christmas Day on ESPN and ABC, also owned by Disney. Lakers-Clippers drew 8.8 million viewers. That's down 14% from last year's Lakers-Warriors game on Christmas Day, but up 77% from 2017. In Los Angeles, the game collected a 12 rating. That's the highest for a regular season game since 2011. Rockets-Warriors on ABC got 6.5 million viewers, down 12% from last year's Sixers-Celtics Christmas Day matchup. But the Celtics did play on Christmas Day 2019 against the Raptors on ESPN. 3.3 million people watched that game, up 4% from last Christmas. And then the later game, the Pelicans against the Nuggets on ESPN, 1.7 million people watched, down 22% from last year. I'm going to get to this Red Sox-Yankees story in just a moment, but there's also a big story involving cable television, including sports on cable television, that I will get to before this special edition of the Sports Media Beat is over. But let's get to the Red Sox and the Yankees. Who's more valuable, the Red Sox or the Yankees? Well, these days, not only do you have to consider the individual franchises, you have to consider that all other things go with these franchises. Their TV networks, their other outside interests. And in that area, the Red Sox beat the Yankees. The Red Sox are owned by the Fenway Sports Group, which was founded by, among others, John Henry and Tom Werner. Now, get this. Their initial investment 18 years ago was $700 million. You know what the Fenway Sports Group is worth today? And this includes the Red Sox, NESN, that's the New England Sports Network. It also includes the Premier League's Liverpool Football Club, Roush Racing, that's NASCAR, and Fenway Sports Management. All of that is valued, according to Forbes, at $6.6 billion, making this group the third richest among the sports entities in the country. only Kroenke Sports at $8.4 billion and Jerry Jones, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys, at $6.9 billion, are worth more. Where are the Yankees? Well, they're fourth on the list, right behind the Red Sox. Yankee Global Enterprises, valued at $6.1 billion. But how is that investment for John Henry and Tom Werner? $700 million 18 years ago, and now they have created Fenway Sports Group, valued at $6.6 billion. If you want to take just the Red Sox, according to Forbes, and remember, they bought the Red Sox for $700 million. The Red Sox, as a franchise alone, worth $3.2 billion. Let's stick with the ratings for just a moment. Boston Sports Radio, for years it was WEEI, All Sports, and then along came WBZ-FM 98.5, and they have, over the years, put together such a programming schedule that they continue to beat the legendary WEEI in the ratings. For the latest ratings book, September 12th through December 4th, the Sports Hub, that's 98.5 FM WBZ, won the fall book over WEEI 93.7 FM. They won the overall ratings. They won in both AM and PM drive. And most significantly, they won the 25 to 54 men demographic. The Sports Hub getting a 10.5 share, which was overall second in the market, by the way, and WEEI coming in with a 7 share, overall fourth in the market. It will be interesting to see how the ratings do for the two big Saturday football games, the battle for the national championship, and the Peach Bowl in Atlanta. It will be number one LSU against number two Oklahoma. I think that game gets underway at 4:30, and then at 8 o'clock, it will be the Fiesta Bowl, number two Ohio State against number three Clemson, and both those games will be televised on ESPN. Now, finally, to cable television. I'm sure many of you know how cable television works. You cannot buy a cable television channel a la carte. You have got to buy channels in bundles. That's how they make their money. And a lot of these bundles include sports channels and some esoteric channel that you don't want to watch. In other words, if you're a sports fan and you want to watch the Red Sox on NESN or the Yankees on YES or the Cubs on their sports station, which will come to be in, this coming season, the 2020 season, what they'll do is they'll package these sports networks with some other esoteric channel that you're forced to take as part of the bundle. You can't just go out and buy the YES channel or NESN or the Cubs channel. That they bundle these channels together. And, of course, that gets a lot of consumers upset. What if you're not a sports fan? And I used to talk about this on my sports talk show and then my general issue show a lot when I was on the radio. What if you're not a sports fan? And you see your cable television bill going up and up and up and up. And one of the reasons it's going up is you've got to underwrite the cost of these sports networks, even though you're not a sports fan, because they might bundle the sports with, let's say, an all-news channel, and all you want is the all-news channel. And so you've got to pay this price. And one of the reasons you have to pay this price is you've got these networks out there underwriting these leagues with huge TV contracts, such as ESPN paying $1.9 billion a year to carry Monday Night Football. And here, even though you might not be a football fan, you've got to take ESPN in order to get CNN or Fox News or MSNBC or whatever. And it's gotten to the point where you're saying, enough already. My cable bill is high as it is. Now, you want to delve into this even more. Remember, a lot of these salaries that these athletes make are salaries that are the result of these big TV rights fees that the clubs and the leagues charge these networks. Well, what would happen if you had the choice? If, let's say, you didn't want to subscribe to a sports channel, but you wanted to get that all-news channel and you could buy it a la carte, that would change the entire industry. It would put the entire industry on its head. and have a major impact, not only on televised sports, but the salaries that these players make. It would kill the goose that laid the golden egg, is what would happen. Well, along comes the state of Maine, and Maine passed a law which would enable the television consumer to buy their channels a la carte. So no more would they be forced to buy a sports channel. Or maybe they would only be able to buy a sports channel. They didn't have to subscribe to the Garden Channel. Or not that I have anything against the Garden Channel, but you know what I'm saying here. They would be able to buy these channels a la carte. State of Maine passes the law. Well, you know what happened. It has been challenged in court. And among the plaintiffs of the networks, the CBS, for example, they're one of the plaintiffs, Comcast of Maine, New Hampshire, NESN, Disney Enterprises, Disney ABC International. Well, they own not only ABC, but ESPN, Fox News, as I said, NESN. They're all plaintiffs in this court case, and a temporary ruling was issued today, or as I record this podcast, a U.S. District Court judge, her name was Nancy Torreson. Well, she issued a ruling today, which was a granting of a preliminary injunction, and it blocks the implementation of Maine's first-in-the-nation a la carte law. But before the cable companies like Comcast and others start jumping up and down, hold everything. Remember, this is a temporary injunction. And what they're arguing, they're coming up with all these reasons, the cable companies, the networks, they're saying, well, what this is doing is barring us from exercising our First Amendment rights, because you're coming along and telling us we can only offer this channel. We can't offer all of these channels. They're arguing on the premise of First Amendment rights. They're also arguing on the basis that this Maine law trumps national law, federal law, and a state law cannot trump a federal law. So essentially what the judge is saying here is Comcast did not convince her that there's anything unconstitutional about this denial of the cable companies to bundle their packages. The reason she issued the temporary injunction, she said, is because the law might unfairly target cable companies, that this is a direct assault on cable companies, but has nothing to do with a cable company's right to bundle. That's very convoluted. State of Maine is arguing, by the way, that if you can offer an a la carte package, it would serve the public's interest and keep cable prices down. I'll believe cable prices being down when I see it, but that's the first salvo that's been fired here in what's going to be a very interesting battle as far as cable television and your right to individually buy or subscribe to just one channel rather than being forced to buy all of these channels to watch the one that's your favorite. I liken it to when you go to the store to buy a loaf of bread, you go to the store to buy a loaf of bread. The supermarket doesn't force you to buy milk, eggs in order to get that loaf of bread. You can walk in and buy the bread. Whereas these cable companies, well, I want a loaf of bread. Well, if you want a loaf of bread, then you're going to have to buy the eggs and the milk. That's what I liken it to. And finally, it's being challenged. And this is an interesting law. We'll see what happens. The judge issued just a temporary injunction, but this is just the first of what could be a long, drawn-out court battle, and believe me, that's what will happen. These companies will do everything possible, draw this out in court to continue the current paradigm, which I believe is outdated anyway, and just continue this structure of cable television and the selling of channels in bundles. Keep this in place for as long as they can. But at some point, it will change. And when it does, it will impact many, many areas in the media, including televised sports. That's going to do it for the Sports Media Beat. Again, my website is sportsmediabeat.com. If you would like to email me, my email address is dan@danlavallo.com. And again, rest in peace, Don Imus. As always, thanks for listening to the podcast, and in this case, a special edition of the Sports Media Beat for December 29th, 2019.